Welcome to Agents of Smooch. As the weather cools and as we get into fall, it is a good time to get into our 1990s flannel and grunge music. We're going back to 1992 when pagers were useful and video dating services were the new hot thing. Let's return to our 20-somethings and the joy of living in your first real place with a proper parking spot. The movie Singles captures a particular era in film in music and technology and fashion. It stars Kyra Sedgwick, Campbell Scott, Matt Dillon, Bridget Fonda as a group of friends navigating the dating scene and looking for something real. I am director Annette Weirstra, and for today's mission, I'm joined by two agents who are representing our Pacific Northwest division, which will be good for this mission. Hello, Kelly Gamont.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know I was nowhere near your neighborhood.
Aw, you are nowhere near my neighborhood. And also in the Portland area, we have Agent Jean McDonald. Hello, Jean.
Hello, director. What took you so long?
I don't really know. I should have done this movie ages ago. And nowhere near their neighborhood, we have Agent Sarah Bickerton, who's over in New Zealand. Hello, Sarah.
Hi. You know, in modern day society, there's almost no need to leave the house.
It's so true.
Oh, so, right.
So true. You're like,
that line
it.
Was like, whoa.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I was really excited because when I suggested this movie as a topic for the Smooch Agency, I didn't know that anyone else watched it. I just thought no one really talks about it. And so when I brought it up, everyone was super into it, especially people of a certain age.
Yes.
And yeah, so... And we had to stop talking because we started talking about our expectations, which was we really like this movie, but we're a little afraid to watch it because what happens when you watch old movies in today's context? And we were deciding it held up not too badly.
Much better than I thought it would, at least for me. And we watched... There was an incomprehensible that Jewel of the Nile was one that we watched and went,
oh, that was not
wow,
that was horrible.
Yeah, and there's been a couple of others that, like, you know, we brought them back to watch and went, no, and I was kind of worried.
Yeah, the one with they both had crocodiles in them.
Yes,
Crocodile Dundee. We're like,
yes. Oh,
yes. Yeah, so it was pretty exciting to watch this one and get to the end and be like, that's basically, like, kind of where I thought I would be with it. Mostly because of my assessment of it the first time round. And I have to say that my fondness for this film started with the soundtrack because the soundtrack came out first.
Mm-hmm.
And I... had a college radio show, and I used to play almost everything off of this soundtrack on my radio show. And the soundtrack came out before the movie. So there was all this awesome music on this record. And I was playing an actual record of it when I was playing it on the air. And it was super great. And it was bands I knew because I knew people in Seattle and had heard a bunch of this stuff kind of already and was very, very excited to find out what this movie was about, if this was going to be the soundtrack for it. So I have at least a handful of songs from this synced to my phone so that I can always listen to them. I have, like, certain songs that I will make sure I sync to my phone. And something from Singles has been on, like, every phone I've done that for. So like, the music of it, for me, is one of the big pieces.
Yeah, you can't talk about this movie without talking about the music.
Yeah, Seattle, I'd say. Seattle itself and the music scene in Seattle is so much a character in this film. It has its own presence. There's aspects of it throughout the film, including the music, that was, like... I mean, in 1992, I was... 18 years old and living in the Netherlands, because that's where I was finishing high school, and I was listening to Violent Femmes and Pearl Jam and Yeah, and just like one of my like vivid memories is sitting in like a 600-year-old castle in the Netherlands, like overnighting for a school trip, and listening to Seattle grunge on a Walkman, because that's what we had, and it was just I loved it, and it's just like the music here just took me back. I was like one of the first club scenes, and it's Pearl Jam playing in the background, and
yeah.
Well, I have to say I was also a little not really hesitant, because I have always liked this film. And I own the DVD, which I watched for this podcast. I thought, I think I own the DVD. I'm pretty sure
yeah,
I do.
I do too.
Even with my recent divestment of many of my possessions, I hung on to singles. I will say I was super disappointed, because I thought, oh, let me watch the special features first. And they're nothing. It's nothing. It's like
there's very little to those.
I saw it. I saw it in the theater. I was 31, 32, and I loved it. You know, I was single. I think I was. And, I went with another single friend of mine. We were like, oh, that was really fun. That was cool. And definitely, I mean, we can pick apart the time warp of, you know, from 92 to 21 and all the things now that we can totally spot that are missing in this film. However, for me, what is missing in this film, which is very ironic for this podcast, is the romance. It really left me cold this time, and I'm very sad about that, because I remember it feeling like, oh my God, they so got it, how people are. And now I'm like, ugh, you know? I still have two crushes in this movie, not the crushes that you would think.
Yeah, no, that was my reaction. It was like, the dating just didn't work for me this time around. I was like looking and going, really? I was like, I had moments where I was like, yeah, there's negging going on there. There's some gaslighting going on there. There's some borderline stalkery behavior that's going on there. And I was like, and maybe that was contributing into it, but it was like, I was looking for serious chemistry and,
nada.
I think, okay, let's go by couples. And I feel like what we're talking about here is Bridget Fonda and Matt Dillon, which is I totally can't remember their names in the
Steve
movie.
Steve and Janet.
Yeah.
Oh no, like, not Steve no, and Janet. No. Sorry. Cliff and Janet.
Cliff.
Steve Cliff. And Cliff. What's her name?
Cliff
Linda.
And Janet. Yeah, so do you ever think they were meant to be romantic though? Or is that I always saw that as like, that's your stupid boyfriend. And this is, I was going to ask you at the end of the podcast, you like 30 years later, where are you at? But do you think, I always saw that as like, oh, that's her having her dumb, I almost swore, dumb boyfriend who's going to treat her like crap. And she's going to learn a lesson from that and learn that even if he says Gesundheit to her, bless you, it's not enough. And he's just a selfish guy who's going to cheat on you when he goes on the road, and he's terrible.
Yeah, he's terrible.
Yeah, that was my, I remembered, of course, that they were going to get together, back together again at the end, but I mean, spoiler alert, but I still, even knowing that, I was rooting for her not to.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Get with the doctor who's super creepy.
Wait. The doctor is super creepy? Okay.
Yeah, that was entirely inappropriate.
I mean, he's in another context. Yes.
Put a pin in that, because that's one of my crushes in this movie. He's Bill Pullman. Yeah. And also, as a doctor in real life, he should not be saying the things he's saying.
No.
But right, in this stupid movie, he should say, I think that if your boyfriend doesn't like you the way you are, you should really reconsider. And I'm like, yes, like, because she's yeah. all ready to hop on the table and have her body mutilated because Cliff has all these
for him.
Like yeah. big boobs like posted all over his room. I was cheering for Dr. Jameson. So
yeah, except for like the way he does it. And then he hits on her is like super inappropriate.
Oh, come on. He hits on her like it's not even a hit. It's just like, oh, man. It's like a little tap on the shoulder. And as soon as she says, like, I love my boyfriend, he's like, I know. And he's like, you know, and he's like, he does not hit on her. I wouldn't say that. I just think he's saying, like, I like
you. I'd
say
he made a pass.
Yeah, he totally made a pass.
He definitely did.
It was like a softball, like little roll down the field.
But he's like, her doctor. You should yeah. not be hitting on your patient.
But I'm just saying, it's just the movie, okay? But in the realm of this movie, I think he's the most appropriate person.
I pick him over Cliff.
Oh, yeah, that is a good point. Yes, 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
That part I'll give you. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, 100%. He's treating you well. He's being good. But I was like, no, your doctor should not hit on you.
That's also true, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
But I did like that he did give her some actual advice that maybe she couldn't have heard from someone else. And I just sort of felt like the two of them were going to go through it again and that she's the only one that seems to learn anything from the last time they did this. Because we know that the time we saw was not the first time or the second time they went through this makeup breakup either. Mm. And I feel like she is going to end up evolving into some final form away from him. That was always sort of my presumption, was like at some point, you know, or maybe it was when that elevator trip ended and she was like, what is wrong with me? No,
they were gonna have makeup sex for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. But after that, like, fix fine. My car windows and we will part as friends, you know? Yeah. Like, yeah.
All right. And just something that I noticed for the first time ever. So when I watched this movie the first time back in the day, I was living in New York. I had not yet been to the Pacific Northwest. I had not yet lived in a two-story, you know, kind of townhome, garden, courtyard kind of building like theirs. I'm like, what elevator? What elevator? That building does not have an elevator.
What mythical building is this with an elevator?
That never occurred to me.
That is a really good point.
True.
Yeah, anyway. Me either, actually. So, but that's just because I lived here. So right.
So now we... So I think like filming it in an elevator was possibly really a device to say like, this is ridiculous, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's meant to be.
Yeah. Well, everything is ridiculous in this movie, but
like she's,
I don't
it's
think...
just like she's so cute and naive and like young and you're like, oh, baby girl.
I don't think Cameron Crowe thinks this movie is that ridiculous, but I think maybe he is a little ridiculous for having made it.
You know what? When I was looking it up, it was classed with Cameron Crowe's early film efforts and it didn't get like a whole paragraph of describing about how amazing it was. And I was like, come on. I feel like there's some good things in here we could talk about.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Definitely.
Maybe I've seen it too many times. That's part of it. Can you wear out a movie? I mean, there's certain movies I haven't worn out, Room with a View. But
amen.
Maybe Singles I'm like done with. And thanks to you all, done with Love Actually. So
sorry.
This podcast is ruining all the romance.
Agents of Smooch, destroying romance. And, we didn't destroy Room with a View.
No, we did not, because it's
and we didn't
eternal.
Destroy. What was the one we did a couple?
Muriel's Wedding.
Muriel's Wedding, and one before that as well. Imagine Me and You.
Oh, I didn't.
Oh
see
yeah,
that.
Imagine Me and You. That was fantastic. Yeah. Also from a similar era. That was a fantastic movie.
Hmm. I think one of the other things that stood out to me about this one was about watching it this time through was almost relief. I think. Somehow in my mind, because I haven't seen it in a while, And I somehow in my mind, I just sort of had decided that Cliff was going to end up being way, way worse than I remember. But no, he's still just a toolbox that would be totally someone I would know.
He's a project for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But yeah. I was sort of worried that he actually was worse than I was sort of remembering. But he was basically what I remembered, which was self-centered and not necessarily mean to Janet, but thoughtless. Like, it doesn't occur to him to consider her or anything like that. Along with that, the band is hilarious. Citizen Dick always cracks me up. I used to have a shirt of theirs.
I love it.
Because I just thought they were hilarious and I was like all in. And one of the things that will, like, one of my strongest memories of this movie is there's a bit in the middle where you see them putting up flyers. And there's a song playing, and that song that's playing is music that Chris Cornell wrote, so there would be extra, like, stuff that sort of sounded like the band in the movie, that sounded like Citizen Dick. And he wrote some of those songs, and that bit of music that's playing when you see the flyers is what ended up being the song Spoon Man from Soundgarden.
Hmm. Cool.
Like, that's actually, and I remember hearing Spoon Man the first time and going, but I know this song. I've heard this song. Why do I know this song? And I couldn't figure it out. And it's just because I've seen Singles a bajillion times. And that bit is like the opening of Spoon Man. So, like, just to go back to the music again. But and like, I'm not saying I have planned a trip to Seattle from Portland with the, well, actually, it wasn't even from Portland. It was before I lived in Portland. So it was when I lived in Eastern Oregon, and with the express purpose of getting to see all the places where these things happened.
Yep.
I would have taken that trip.
But I've been there.
Oh, yep. I totally would have taken that trip.
Yeah. Yeah. I did it twice, actually.
Kelly, I'd still go meet you and take that trip with you.
I would love to do that. That would be so fun.
I mean, yeah, I've done it, like, and I'm like, it's not that I dislike this film intensely. I love it in many ways. And I would love, you know, I have been to that apartment building, you know, and various places. Mm-hmm. Yet, and I would do it again, especially if visitors from New Zealand and that place up there north.
Canada.
Canada. And visit us.
Yeah, I'd totally go. It was a lot of fun. And I like that Seattle sort of figured in it in its own way as well. That was another thing that I sort of dug about it, because I was familiar with Seattle already when the movie came out. So it was kind of nice to be like, oh, that's a place I've been. Like, I've been to the Neptune Theater and, you know, some of that stuff, like, from the beginning. So it was kind of, it's always neat when you live in the Northwest. It's always neat to see something that you recognize from your native land on the screen. It didn't really used to happen very often. So it was always kind of nice to be like, oh, but that's a place I've been. And and Seattle sort of figured in all of it just in a bunch of different ways, sort of like the music did, which I think is another reason that I particularly enjoy it.
Yeah, that was when I was watching the film, because of course the first time I saw it, I'd never been to Seattle, but since living in the US, I had been there a bunch of times. So this was my first time rewatching it, having spent a chunk of time in Seattle, and there were scenes like how did they get from there to there? Wait, it's like, they'd leave a building and I'm like, but that's in the center city. Why are they none of the places connected up. But the interesting thing about like the courtyard apartment building is it's like, I as I mentioned to you guys before the podcast, I lived in Chicago for so long, and courtyard apartment buildings are a classic Chicago institution, where you like have that big U building around a courtyard, and that was like kind of funny to see like a two-story courtyard building in Seattle. It's like, how common is that building type? Because I don't remember seeing that too frequently in Seattle. How frequently are there many of those buildings in around Seattle?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, not so much anymore, probably, but.
Yeah, I don't know how many have made the cut in the last 30 years.
Yeah, it's a classic configuration, which does lead to that fishbowl effect.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And I did sort of like that it was kind of about the people in the building. Like that was mm-hmm. always the thing I appreciate yeah. about this movie. It wasn't so much about how all these people knew each other. It was about they were all neighbors in this apartment building, and we get to sort of peek into each of those lives and relationships, and some of those relationships intersect that we get, you know, and we get mm-hmm. to watch them. So that was part of what I thought was kind of fun about it. I was sort of sad to not find out how stuff turned out with Bicycle Guy for anybody.
No, I think it's pretty clear what turned out with Bicycle Guy.
I think Bicycle Guy got what he wanted, but not with the same girl.
Well, and that was my question, was like how it went for the two of them. That was the thing I always wondered about that movie, was like, but what about those?
That's true. But, well, I'd like to know what Debbie is doing now with Victor Garber.
Yeah, which is your other crush, right?
Other crush.
Okay, I was
Paul Giamatti.
No, not Paul Giamatti.
Not when he kisses like that.
Ooh, yeah. I was stunned, though. I did not remember that it was Paul Giamatti in that movie until he surfaces.
I didn't either until he spoke that one word and went, oh, that's exactly who that is. Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty funny because you don't usually see him as like the big makeout king. But no, my crush is kind of a secret crush and not one you would really pick out of this movie, but is Eric Stoltz. And he is the mime.
Yeah, that was when he popped up, I was like, wait, he looks really familiar, because again, when I saw it the first time, I had no idea who half these people were. And then I saw I was looking at the mime going, that voice is really familiar. So I was quickly leaping onto IMDb and going, oh my god.
Yeah, because you don't recognize them, and you can't see his beautiful ginger hair, which is, gingers are my weakness, if you know.
But he also has one of what I think is the funniest moments in the movie, when he's sitting in the back seat and he puts his fingers up to his lips like he's smoking a cigarette, because he's a mime, so he's pretending, but then smoke comes out of his mouth.
Yeah.
It's
so funny to me every time. And it turns out, because I watched it earlier today for the podcast, and so today, still so funny, and still the thing that stands out to me, and it cracks me up.
Yeah, it is truly like a fantastic moment in the movie, unlike the rest of the movie where all these things happen and you're supposed to believe they're kind of real, but they are also kind of bogus.
And God, just as we're talking side characters, God, how skeevy was Tom Skerritt as the man?
He was great. Oh my God, yeah.
Oh.
I mean, he was great as the mayor, I guess that's what I'm saying. But yeah.
Yes.
I feel like that's the first thing I ever saw Tom Skerritt in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really remember if I remember him from anything before that, but I do remember that. And of course, watching today, is also very funny for the garage door opener that's also a pager, which was very amusing, but also like the payphone, like the payphone being its own, a room off, a little off room on its own, and the super train, which still doesn't have and really needs, and it should come to Portland.
Nobody has a super train. Nobody has the super train. You do not get good coffee. We do not get great coffee. We do not get great music.
No, great coffee, great music. Like, I'm still waiting for the super train is what I'm saying. Like, yeah.
I like the train that we have, but it's not a super train.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, yeah, the Alaskan Way Viaduct is like crops up in one of the first scenes. Uh-huh. And I'm like, yes. it's not even there anymore.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. It was some of those things were just funny given the current, like, I still go to Seattle and spend time there. And so watching the evolution of it, you know, like knowing what it is now, or at least what it was, you know, 2 years ago or last time it was I went. And what it was in this movie, and seeing how a lot of it was still the same, but a lot of it is very, very, very different. and it was kind of fun to watch that piece of it too.
I really loved, I just like the moments of time of the technology, because like he's staring at a fax machine waiting for resumes to come back. There's like answer phone machines that are the size of old school VHS tape players.
And it getting eaten up, right? That all the time.
Yeah.
And honestly, I would have, if I were her, I would have said, let me get my pencil and wind this thing back up so I can listen to it. Like, because...
Amateur.
Yeah, amateur. And
right. Especially if you know it eats tapes. Like, why is there not... Yeah.
And you're certainly kind of waiting for a phone call. You know, you would have wound that thing back up.
Yeah, she would have been, whatever. Like, obsessing over whether or not he called.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 10, 20 meter long extension cord for your phone.
Yes. Yes, because you had to have one so you could, like, lay on the couch or in a chair and have long conversations.
One of those class...
I can still think of the weight... of holding the phone itself when you've got the handset up against your head. I can feel that weight in my hand right now, because you kind of know how heavy the bass is and you walk around and oh God.
Yeah. And then I remember being impressed that Janet could dial upside down. Because there was only like two, maybe like two numbers I could dial upside down on the push button phone. Like, so I was just sort of impressed that like his was one of those numbers. I just sort of, it was a thing that struck me as a long time dial phone user. All of that. It was some of those pieces of technology and like exactly where everything was at that point. Because I don't even think there's like cell phones or anything that anybody has.
Nope.
In this movie. Nope. So we don't even see any of like anything like that. So just pagers was like the closest we got.
Yeah, there was one wireless phone that they had on the table, but that's kind of like, what, it's wireless. It wasn't a cellular.
It was cordless. It was
cordless. Cordless, yes.
Yeah, just a cordless phone, which was common at that point.
Yeah.
But they were great to watch.
Perhaps it's a good time to segue into the video dating.
Oh, I love it. I love that part. Yeah.
Her video, I forgot about her video. And when I watched, I was like, oh, this is so good and so terrible.
Yeah.
Look, for an extra $20, I would have let Tim Burton shoot my dating video too.
Yeah, that was great. That was really funny.
I've heard he's only like, the next Martin Scorsese.
In 1991, it was even funnier, you know?
Yes.
because Martin Scorsese, not many people probably recognized Tim Burton, but everybody knew who Martin Scorsese was.
Yes.
I love that actress, actually. I mean, it's such a small bit, but when she says, truth, mm-hmm. okay, mm-hmm. I will create your style and men will be dying at your feet, and I like that a lot. So she was funny.
Yeah, she was fun. I did like Debbie too. Like, I thought she was fun in her own right.
Oh yeah, Debbie is one of the best characters.
Yeah, she's like super distinct. Like of all of, like, she was definitely a person absolutely doing her own thing and just going for it, and I really enjoyed that.
No, Kelly, no biggie. No, it is a biggie.
Little chunky thing on my glass, which there are phrases from this movie that I still use.
Yes, and me too.
Yeah,
I think that's why I still think I love it so much, is that, I mean, it has so many funny lines, and a lot of them, you know, originate with Debbie. Come to Debbie country. I mean,
come to Debbie country is still, and like the whole video is just so funny, and I remember being really impressed with it when it was all done, and be like, wow, that was really entertaining. Like, yeah. So I wanted to see the videos she got to watch, like the other guys's, like more of the other guys' videos, because I just wanted to know if the girl who'd worked on Debbie's like had worked on any of theirs, you know, and if it was like the same thing.
Well, I think we just got some of those clips with video, like they said things, and that's all we got.
Yeah, we got like their replies. Like, here's the thing we want. Here's the.
If you pay your $200, you get your 5 replies. You don't get all the replies.
Like, yeah, you don't get all.
I mean, that's. I don't know how it works. I have never done it. I always wondered how it works, and I'm pretty sure I still don't know. But I did enjoy.
Like, imagine how much work that is, though. Like, to go somewhere, put together a video, and have a tape, and like, how are you getting it? You probably have to drive over there and pick up the tapes and take them home and put them in your machine. And then, you know, it's just like bananas how much work it is. Impressed Debbie. Yeah. Way to go, Debbie.
Yeah. That's why she was very dismissive of it being, you know, for desperate people and stuff, was because like, there's a lot of overhead involved. You know, once you get VHS involved, there's a lot of overhead happening.
Yeah, the thing I was confused by when they had the clips was like why they were all about the bike guy. It was like, was he
the least weird.
Yeah, I know. That's the closest I came, was like, okay, yeah.
He seemed like the most reasonable, I guess, of all of them.
Also, yeah, so that guy, I don't know if you recognize the actor.
From 30-something?
30-something, yeah. Yeah. And so he was actually, you know, kind of a hot commodity back then.
With that hair?
With that hair and the whole look and like he, yeah, his whole.
And like biker shorts and that whole outfit was like a thing.
It was a thing. And Debbie wore it well. I mean, you know, it was the first time she wore it, but she wore it well. I was impressed at how good she looked in her.
Oh yeah, she looked great.
Her hot pink canary yellow getup.
Yeah. Another thing that sort of that was sort of a sign of the times was like it was very brightly colored, but it didn't seem weird in the moment. Like when the movie came out, like lots of stuff was still pretty brightly colored, and so you know, flannel aside, like it still wouldn't. It wasn't weird for her to be wearing what she was wearing because we were still in the tail end of the.
Debbie was never wearing flannel.
No.
I do notice we've completely avoided talking about Steve and Linda.
Because.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been going for how long now? And we haven't mentioned Steve and Linda.
So I guess that means you're going to make us do that. And so, yeah, Steve and Linda are sort of, I always see them as the main couple and the most romantic couple.
Or so we thought.
And so is this the part everyone thought didn't age as well?
It just like an age, not because of the cultural thing necessarily, just because of my particular age, where 30 years ago it seemed romantic. Now I'm like, he's not that great. She's not that great. Their whole like, oh, I should have said something, but I didn't. Like relationship, it doesn't work for me. It doesn't seem romantic at all. And the only romantic thing about it is like I was just nowhere near your apartment.
Yeah, I love that line.
It's a great line.
It's a great line.
I think for me, one of the things that I always sort of liked about them was that they were kind of the opposite of Cliff and Janet, in that each of them had like their own lives that they were living, and then also trying to see what a relationship would be like with this person, as opposed to my whole life is trying to have a relationship with this person, which was always the thing I sort of liked about them. But I think it's part of why the romance piece of it doesn't seem to click, I guess, quite as well, is that it didn't really seem like it didn't seem like anybody was having the right reaction to what was going on, I guess, like until Steve gets to the point where, they decide they're not, you know, like everything is too weird. And so he doesn't say anything. And then he goes home and plunges into depression. Like that part felt legit, but it didn't feel like the relationship they'd had up to that point justified that was the reaction that he had when he brought her, when he picked her up, I guess. So I think that's why it didn't seem like it rang very true. And so I did he did say all the right stuff, kind of, because, I was just nowhere near your neighborhood. And I think there's some nice moments in his voicemail. I was just having many beers and, you know, and I love you. And I really liked
that it was you belong with me and not to me, which is something I feel like a lot of movies would have done in the 90s. So
yeah,
I did like that with me. And I did sort of appreciate, you know, it took many beers, as he said.
Yeah.
But he was trying to be honest about his feelings for like once. And that's always one of the things that can either go really well in a romantic movie or can go really poorly, like as a reaction to whatever it is he's doing. Like, oh, you know, he declared his love and it was just gross, you know. But like, I felt like this one sort of it did ring true, but I never really felt like anything that was happening in their relationship kind of precipitated anything that happened next. So that's kind of why I think it didn't add up.
Yeah, that was my feeling too, was that like I liked Steve as a character. I liked Linda as a character. They out of everybody in the film, they seem to have their stuff together the most. Yeah, I was going... I mean, personally, I would have rooted for Kira Sedgwick, for Linda to go back out and do more research. Like literally the most animated the character was when she got off the boat. She was obviously like being fulfilled and emotionally like stable, and she'd loved what she'd done there, and she repaired herself after the death of the baby. And then suddenly it was like blah, and they didn't work as a couple for me at all.
No, I liked. So my favorite Linda thing is, one, you do have a thing. Two, your thing is having no thing or whatever. And I was like, yes, that is exactly, you know, what she like nailed him, you know. Yeah. Steve's like, my friend and I are having a debate, you know.
It was so lame, Steve. It was just so lame.
Yeah. Like, oh, stop. It's just like, yeah, whatever. Also, I really love Linda's friend from work. I don't remember her name.
And her two-level haircut.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ruth, wasn't it?
Ruth, right, yeah. She is, I don't think she's ever done anything else. And I think she's like, I was like, I'd like a friend like that at work if I had work.
Oh, no, I looked her up and she was in like the Good Fight.
Oh, really?
Good. She's been in some shows, but it's nothing I've watched.
Anyway, I like them as a couple. Probably my favorite couple. I don't know. The two of them were like such buds, and where, you know, where Linda goes like, we will always,
she was a solid
always
friend.
Dance.
We will, you know, always go out dancing.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like,
best friend ever.
Yeah, you will. You totally will always go out dancing. You definitely won't get too busy and never go dancing when you're like, you know, 40 something. And be like, how do we get out of the house? Yeah. So, yeah. But like, yeah, at that age, I was like, totally the same.
Yeah.
No, the thing that really, I was like watching Steve and I was watching the rest of them. And I looked up the actor Campbell Scott, and he was 31 at the time of filming, which was, I thought, okay, that fits with the way in which I was feeling, because he just seemed older than everybody else.
Yeah,
he had a real job too, yeah, right? Like everyone else was in those transitional jobs, and he had like a career job.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Linda had a pretty serious job. I mean, she did. Like, call in the Coast Guard. I thought that was pretty,
we have the Coast Guard working for us. Yeah, it was great.
And Campbell Scott, if you haven't already looked it up, he is the son of George C. Scott and Trish Van Devere, which is why he looks so classic. Like, I think he probably looked old when he was a little kid. He has like such good genes.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. I had such a crush on him because of this movie.
Yeah.
Such a crush on him.
I used to. Yep. Used to. but I went back to Eric Stoltz and also John Cusack, who I believe was supposed to be the lead of this film.
Oh, I could see that.
I think, I mean, I didn't look up my like trivia on this movie, but, you know, Cameron Crowe, Seattle, like, it would make sense that John Cusack was in the running.
Yeah.
And I mean, whether I would have enjoyed it so much in 1992, I think I would enjoy it more today if it was John Cusack.
Absolutely would have, because one of my other all-time favorite movies is Say Anything. Yeah. So I would have been thrilled to bits to have Lloyd Dobler show up in another movie. That would have been great. So.
Yeah, I will admit, Bridget Fonda's character was my crush back in the day, because like,
I could see that.
Yeah, she's so beautiful.
Oh yeah. Well, it was more just the character. Like 90s coming out me was like all about the little manic pixie dream girls with the and
High Plains Woman. I was I would like to be that High Plains Woman. I don't know what that means even.
So it was like seeing her was like, well, although, I mean, there was aspects, the white t-shirt with the waistcoat undone over the top was a big part of my uniform back in the 1990s.
Oh, that comes from the Annie Hall. Like, I mean, it's a holdover from Annie Hall, I thought. Yeah. Some of her clothes.
I think her wardrobe still holds up as the best.
Oh, but yeah.
Hat she had.
The hat's great. Yeah. Yeah. Like, all of her outfits were pretty great. She always seemed reasonably put together.
Yeah, I was unsure. What was her job again?
She worked at the coffee. She worked barista. At the coffee shop.
Yeah, barista. Yeah, she was a barista, like, full-time, I think.
She wanted to be an architecture
school. Yeah, she wanted to go to school. Yeah, architecture school. But, yeah, that was the thing. Was like, I was looking at that apartment and going, how are you affording this one? I don't know.
They were tiny. Yeah. It was the 90s. They weren't that fancy back then, those little apartments. Right. Okay. Just saying. I mean,
that too.
There was like an affordable life for the non-professional set.
For the coffee shop person. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I really like that line from Linda right at the beginning about like, my first time I have no dorm. I'm living by myself. I have a parking space. And it's like, that was like one of those moments where I remember just ending my teens and starting university and seeing that line, and it's like, it's the dream.
Yes.
It's the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when I watched that, I was still like slightly too young to be off. Well, I could have been, but I had no money to go live off on my own and have a parking space.
Oh, God, no, neither did I.
And a car. Yeah, no. I had no car. Yeah. I was 19 when this came out, so
she seemed unbelievably together.
Yeah, and so cool. I was like, you know,
I'm gonna say I now have a parking space and a little garage like remote control, and I was like, I have that now.
I have
it's
one about, too.
Yeah, but
it's the size of a quarter.
I would not give it away.
No.
Yeah.
No, that was pretty dumb. Let's face it, the opening of the show was kind of dumb. Like, first of all, I don't know. I mean, I know there's real creeps out there and jerks out there in the world, but I thought that fake Spanish guy was like uber jerky, like for the parameters of this movie. I couldn't believe that somebody would be that horrible.
But also ponytail guy.
I say that whenever
Mr.
I see
Sensitive Ponytail Man.
Sensitive Ponytail Man. I use that phrase all the time now. And also James LaGrosse, which if you've seen him in anything else, he is not Sensitive Ponytail Guy.
He is so not that guy. Yeah. But I have said that even still. Like, even if I don't say it,
recently,
the back of my brain goes, that's Mr. Sensitive Ponytail Man.
Yeah. Oh, God, I so knew these guys through.
Yeah. Totally.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Yeah. So many of them. And he just feels like the guy, like, he always liked her, but he was staying friends so he could move in as soon as there is a, like,
totally. Because one day she'll wake up and realize that he's the one all along, right?
Yeah. He's the guy.
The precursor to the incel without being completely an incel.
Well, it's like being alone, but being together. I mean, I just quoted this last week when I was hanging out with some people. You know, I said something about like, oh, you're Sensitive Ponytail Man. And I said, there is so much life in you. and so much emotional larceny in these others.
Oh, yes. I mean, but at like 19, I would have fallen for that so hard.
Yeah, I would have too. And, yeah. You know, she's there. That's why I was describing to somebody. I said, she's there. It's like the, you know, beginning of college, and she's got the solo cup with the beer. And I forgot about dress up as your favorite contraception, which...
yes, I was a semester too late. That was so funny.
And yeah, so there, I mean, that's what I love about this film is there, the writing, which you have to, you know, again, assign to Cameron Crowe, is I quote this film probably more than any other film because... you know, it just has so many great lines that make you crack up no matter what else is going on the screen.
Yeah, I regularly say, I could not be fooling you less. Right. To this day, I say that all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was things I noticed that didn't age well for me was like, there were... It's very white.
Yep.
Yes. Like there's like,
oh yeah.
I counted there's like three black people in the entire film. And one's a basketball player. One is the video guy. And one is a woman who's a waitress. And yep, that's it. They each have like one line, I think.
It is the Pacific Northwest too.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say Seattle is an awfully white place overall.
But we,
not that that makes it right, but.
It's also super straight.
Yes. That was the other point I was going to make. The glaring obvious of the fact that it was super straight.
It's super straight. And yeah, that is not a thing I noticed when I first saw it. And now I can't help but go why not Pammy and Debbie together? Mm-hmm. Like they're already living together. They would, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, I'd like to think that contemporarily we wouldn't get an ensemble comedy, dating comedy, rom-com like this without a queer pairing in it.
I agree.
Contemporarily. Yeah. I think we would. Yeah.
Or at least not one that we would all go and see.
Not one that we would enjoy. You know?
No. Yeah. No. Yeah. Those two things were things I definitely noticed.
Yeah.
Also, there's a couple of lines like in the video where she's like, no chubs. So it's like,
yeah.
A little fat phobia is creeping in there as usual.
Right. I forgot about that one. Yeah.
Yeah. No druggies. I'm with you, Debbie. However, in modern day Seattle, there's going to be a lot of potheads.
Yeah.
It's so different now, at least that aspect of it.
Anything else that anyone noticed? Did not age well from that context?
Well, just generally, I was surprised. I don't know if it's this, like an aging thing per se, but I was surprised at how I felt like the men were more cavalier about relationships than I remember them being. Like the Steve, when he's like, well, I was dating Jen and then Jen dumped me to go with Tony, and then Tony is dating Rita on the side. Rita this, or do I tell Jen this? And I'm like, I actually like this character. And now I'm like, I don't know if that's a artifact of its time. I don't think it is. It just was like that kind of myth of the guy who goes out with lots of girls and even the good guy, you know, dumps on them. And
And he has that moment with her too, when he says, if I was playing games, I'd have waited a week.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. Which was true. And she was playing a game too. So she picked up the phone.
Yeah.
I mean, it was funny. I think but then when she goes like, I overreacted. Didn't I? Do you know who this is? That was really funny.
I did like that moment. Yeah.
On the phone, but yeah.
Yeah. Do you know who this is? Yeah.
I think we've hit the big
issues
where it has not aged well, and in comparison to other films we have seen.
The friend David reminds me of, you know, that whole era when you were supposed to nag women to pick them up and like wear a cool hat and be like that whole like how to pick up, be the pickup artist books, and I was like,
numbers?
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's like
20
oh,
numbers.
He's totally that guy. And then I loved when Steve says, yeah, you've got 20 numbers, but you're never going to call any of them.
20 women you will never call. Yeah.
Never see in daylight.
Yeah. Who says, hey, I've got 20 numbers in his watch, yeah. which was
yeah. numbers. Yeah.
Tech, high Speaking tech back then.
Dated tech. Yeah. The yeah, that was, I remember that bit too. Like never see in daylight. Just so that you can say that you're the guy with 20 numbers, you know, and a hat, obviously.
But. Yeah, those hats, those like kind of pillbox hats, which Cliff had one as well. Like, I was like, I don't really yeah. remember that style.
Yeah, there's just bits of it that definitely don't age well. But overall, like, I feel like, I mean, you could do this again. Mm. I think, like, I mean, everybody wants to reboot everything. Like,
this one would I'd welcome a remake of this in, you know, with the caveats we have already mentioned. Yeah. In a city, you know, where they show like what would be a realistic lifestyle for people mm-hmm. who are baristas and have four other jobs.
Yeah. And I think that's one thing I still appreciate about this movie is that it's not, what did he just say on Ted Lasso, where like, everyone lives in an yeah. unreasonably great apartment and has a really interesting mm-hmm. job.
Yeah.
Like, these are not those people. And I think that's one of the other things that right. appeals to me about this movie is that there's none of that, you know, I live in this amazing apartment. You know, you live in a kind of rundown apartment building with a fountain that doesn't even work, you know,
yeah.
that sort of stuff. Like, I think that's part of what I like about this one is that it stands out in that way.
True.
So. I kept thinking, do I want to see the sequel to this movie where we see them all 30 years later and someone's still living in that apartment? Probably Cliff.
It's Cliff.
It's Cliff.
Yeah,
it's
Cliff. It's totally
Cliff. Yeah. And yeah, just be like, where are they now? Are they still together? I was like,
Debbie is totally in Mexico.
She's with, with Victor Garber.
Wherever they move to next in their international jet-setting life.
Yeah.
She's some sort of media mogul now. I don't know where, but absolutely, yeah. She's, like, the head of some sort of media empire. Like, an underground media empire. Like, it's, you know, it's enough to support them very well and to be this jet-set lifestyle. But it's not, you know, she's not like the head of NBC or anything like that. Like, it's just going to be one of these with like lots of really passionate fans, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Janet has graduated and started up her own practice in probably San Francisco.
Yeah.
She's moved down. Yeah.
And ended up with a girl. And that's why her and Cliff never worked out.
Yep.
Yes, that's totally what I'm willing. Yeah, given the waistcoat and t-shirt vibe that she had going on, I think there's some nascent queerness there that could be cultivated by ending up in San Francisco in the
1990s. She can be bisexual architect in San Francisco. I buy it.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. I'd see it. Yeah, I could see that happening.
What about Steve and Linda? Are they together?
No, they're totally divorced.
They're
No.
So they got married, but divorced.
Yeah.
They did end up married, but...
Yeah. You know what? And they have two kids.
Yeah.
And they're schlepping them back and forth for visitation.
So they're stuck together forever.
Yeah. I think they like each other. I don't think it ended badly. I think that I think they ended up having the relationship that they talked about where one of them went out for groceries and never came back. Mm-hmm. I think they ended up actually having that relationship.
Who went out for groceries?
Linda. I don't know. It's hard to say.
I think it was Linda because I think at some point she decided to pick her job.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, that's
the relationship with her job over the relationship with Steve.
And Steve never got over the dumping of his grand
super
passion.
Super train.
He never got over that. Yeah.
He's still trying to get the super train going.
Four mayors later and nothing's any better.
No, now he moved to like Fargo and he's trying to get a super train going there.
Yeah. And Linda is now living in probably in Vancouver, I think. She's just gotten away. She's still got connections back, but she's moved elsewhere.
Are you saying she emigrated or she moved to Southern Washington State?
She emigrated.
I think Sarah means
she emigrated.
I figured.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Pam cycle guy?
Yeah, they're together.
Oh, yeah, they're totally together. Yeah, yeah.
They
yeah.
cycle everywhere yeah. still.
Yeah, and they're still living in Seattle. Yeah.
They're only making popcorn with each other.
Oh, adorable.
It was really cute. Possibly the cutest couple. I don't know.
Yeah.
I did okay. enjoy them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they had like actual chemistry happening. Yes. They liked each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They yeah, did. Totally. Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, they're still in Seattle. He's running a bike shop.
Yes.
A yeah. bike empire, probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's a chain of them all over town. Yeah.
They're electric bikes now.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, also, yeah, also e-bikes. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I like
absolutely.
It. And Matt, or Cliff, he never succeeded as a musician and is still sort of like stuck trying to make it. He's going to have his big break.
He succeeded as a musician. Let's get
no,
that.
No, I think his band straight. Succeeded without him and left him behind. Yeah.
But he was a musician. He was a gigging, and they were
big in Belgium.
He was loved.
And Italy.
Yes, but every time they got back, they didn't like it. Like, it didn't go well. So yeah. I interpret that yeah. as Cliff got dumped because he was the dead weight, and then the rest of the band
oh, absolutely.
Got famous.
Oh, yeah.
And he's never gotten
well,
over
they
it.
Did, didn't they?
Well, yes, they did. And he's super bitter, and they never, like, he's just, like, stuck in that space, and he's, like, the that's why he's still in the apartment, the same spot.
I don't think he can get beyond it, but I think he's probably somehow optimized and at least gotten down to like two jobs now.
Sure. I mean, of all of them, he had the most jobs, so he yeah. was clearly
he had some hustle.
Like, he was employable.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's teaching music, I think.
Or is he a band manager?
Oh gosh!
Mm. He's the bartender at a club.
Yeah. Maybe he owns. A
Maybe
club.
He has his own. He has his own bar
where new bands play and stuff. And then he's a little bit. Oh no, it's not his bar. He works for somebody else.
Okay.
No, I think he owns it, and it's a grunge bar, and it's like
really.
Yeah,
I don't see him accumulating any capital.
I don't see him accumulating any attention span for that sort of thing. So I just assume he's like. The bartender at night when the shows are on because he already blew out his ears so he doesn't care anyway. Mm-hmm. And like anytime anybody comes in, you know, anybody new that hasn't heard his spiel yet, then they get, you know, that could have been me and my band left me behind, you know, and yeah. like tells the story of how he was wronged because, you know, he was loved in Belgium and, you know,
Italy.
He could have really
Italy.
Been.
Don't
and Italy.
I forgot about Italy until I actually... You know, watch it this time. I was always say loved in Belgium, but now I say loved in Belgium and Italy.
And ponytail guy Andy is in a Silicon Valley doing
yes.
oh, yeah.
Bitcoin stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we solved that. So. How about the David, the one I always forget about?
I mean, considering he's like in the top like billing as an actor in this film. I was going to say, he's still living there, too.
He's still getting 20 numbers a night.
Yes. In that same watch.
He teaches classes on how to pick up women.
Oh.
Oh, I could see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So we solved that. We don't need to make a movie now.
Although, if they're wanting to pay us for this idea and the script, we are totally, yeah.
Yes, true. We're always available to sell out. I think it is time for a round of final thoughts. So let's go and start with you, Kelly. What's your final thoughts on this one?
I still enjoy it. And I think I still had some nice moments with it. I'm going to listen to the music from it for the rest of my life. That's just a fact. And overall, I think it held up really well in that all of the stuff I didn't used to like about it, I still don't like. And all of the parts that were fun. We're still fun, and I don't think it was a particularly unevolved movie, which is part of why there for the most part it's not super cringy or anything, you know, to watch now. So and I like I said before, I appreciate that this is more about people who are trying to have relationships instead of people who have lives that are trying to have relationships as part of their lives instead of making it the whole thing, and they seemed like actual people. A little bit more like they felt like people I could have run into in Seattle and people that I knew in Seattle at the time. So I think that's what I appreciate about it, is it felt very, it didn't feel too far removed from reality for me.
How about for you, Jean?
Like I said at the beginning, I remembered it a lot more like tugging at my heartstrings, and that maybe I'm just like a very cynical old lady now, but I was like, meh, not so much into it. Campbell Scott was never my heartthrob in this movie, but this time watching it, I really was watching some little details that made me go like, he, you know, he's always talking like, I'm going to be Mr. Casual. You know, I'm going to be Mr. New. I'm going to be this. Like, he's always like, he does have a thing. And his thing is that he has a thing. there's one moment where where she comes off the boat that first time from Alaska. And he's meeting her. And there, it's very awkward. And she says, he says, like, you know, we don't have to be what we were before. And she's like, oh, thank you. And he's like, he tilts his head up in the air and goes like, yes, like, thank you, you know, like, thank God, like, in a fake way, like, that he's relieved, faked relieved. So he's Mr. Fake Relieved, when he is not at all. He is, you know, once he has some beers, he, you know, he reverts. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what, for me, if the movie doesn't have, you know, one serious, like, crush opportunity for me, and, I mean, Eric Stoltz, he's the mime, so it's not really that. and you guys have totally destroyed Dr. Jameson. So, yeah, it's not a romance movie for me anymore. But it is a super funny movie that I will continue to quote until my deathbed.
And how about for you, Sarah?
Yeah, I'm kind of along the same lines. I think I liked it more when I was younger, but that's kind of true of a whole bunch of things. And I will admit, as now a 40-something looking back at this, I'm like, God, 20-somethings annoyed the crap out of me.
Sorry to all the 20-somethings.
But I'll agree with what Jean said, that, like, I don't think this is a rom-com for me anymore. I think it's just, it's a moment in time that I really enjoyed that meant so much to me. And this film had so many of those things in it that were such a pivotal moment for me that just bring me out. I think speaks more now to how much I've moved on from that moment, even though it's something that really means so much to me. Like, as I said earlier, like, my crush back then totally would have been Janet. But I think now it's Linda more than Janet. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's like there was that moment in time. I still enjoy it. The romance angles don't work for me now. The gender politics, the race politics, the sexuality, obviously. Yeah, it's like a great a little bit, but as a film of its time, because it is very much a film of its time, and it's a time that means so much to me, that the film means so much to me.
Yeah, I feel like pretty much exactly the same, because I feel like watching this movie is steeped in nostalgia and just brings me back. And I remember that era. I loved being that age. And, it, you know, when your whole life starts opening up around you and you have that freedom and you have all that potential, and, like, dating wise, work wise, life wise, there's so much ahead of you. And it's just so nostalgic. And I also find that it was so romantic to me, and I no longer find, like, it, maybe it's like we're knocking it off as a romance completely, but it just, I think calling it a movie of its time is really apt, because I think it sits well in its time. It's probably pretty representative. It feels like it just brings a lot of those things back. And it was really fun to rewatch it, even though you're like, I'm like so relieved it wasn't like a dumpster fire, because it's happened before. So, you know, it's just like, okay, yes. So it was a funny movie that I enjoyed. I still enjoy, but
I think part of why I'm curious, because we don't have anyone who watched it for the first time.
That would be interesting. Yeah.
And it's like, would they like it? And if you watch it and you have thoughts about it and you've never seen it before, tell us. What do you think? Because they might hate this movie, but for me, I think my love of it is completely rooted in me in that 19-year-old, 20-year-old self. And my friends, Rose and Lisa, who watched it with me all the time. Hey there, call me.
Before you go to Cabo?
Yes, exactly.
It's definitely very nostalgic. And for me, I appreciate getting to watch it again. And I think most of what I like about it now is what it reminds me of, from when it came out at the time, which is part of why I like the songs that I like from it.
Oh, the soundtrack is so good.
When the beats of that one song comes out and that happy little beat, and I'm like, that takes me back.
The Seattle sound in that really weird interview that Cliff has, but they talk about that Seattle sound, and it is that sound of music at that particular moment in time. And I don't know what it is. I'm not educated enough about music to be able to go, that's the thing that's resonating with me. But everything through it was like, that sound was just, that was grunge. That was that era. And I loved it. Every single time a track popped up on the film, I was like, oh.
Thank you so much for joining me. I'm just still kind of delighted that I'm not the only person who remembers and loves this movie. So,
yay.
So thanks for joining me, Kelly.
I'm so happy to be here. I just need you. I think this may have been the one when we were trying to schedule where I wrote my name in all caps.
Yes, you did.
Kelly volunteers as tribute. I do deeply love this movie. Director, I'm always up to talk about this with you at any point.
In plaid, she's wearing plaid, listeners. She sent me proof.
I could not be fooling you less.
And thank you, Jean.
Director, a compliment for you is a compliment for us.
And thank you, Sarah.
Oh, Annette, you rock my world.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
This was a delight. We hope you all, listeners, enjoyed being as nostalgic about this as we did. But we will be back in a few weeks with another episode. And until next time, stay safe, agents. Agents of Smooch is part of the Incomparable Network. If you are enjoying our show, please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the Smooch Agency, you can become a member of The Incomparable at theincomparable.com/members. Members can choose to support us and any other shows on the network, and you get extra perks like hanging out in the members-only Slack channel and bonus content such as our growing list of incomprehensible Agents of Smooch tipsy commentaries. Thank you for listening. Your next mission will be coming to you soon.